Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks. Welcome to the Herald's Horn. On this episode, we're talking about cheating on Magic the Gathering Online, content creation programs, the new Secret Lair Super Drop, spoilers, most of it already sold out, and also we get to talk a little bit about the newest changes that are coming for the CEDH community sphere. It's pretty interesting and cool stuff. After the break, I am joined by Chase Carroll, also known as Mana Curves, to talk about their love of Secret Lairs as a product line, so much so that they have an entire Secret Lair deck. It's a great interview that you won't want to miss. Let's get into the episode. Hello, you are listening to episode number 8 of the Herald's Horn. My name is Cal Jones, and we have a great show for you today. This is where I was supposed to do a bit about how I'm joined by Emma, and she's really sleepy because we were going to originally do the recording of this really late her time, but we moved it up, and instead it's a perfectly normal time. Emma, how are you doing today?
Great. I am not sleepy.
Excellent. It's because instead of recording this at like 11:30 p.m. your time, we're recording it at
6:30 or close to 7, which is
much more,
which
much.
Is reasonable. The sun's still out. I can go outside after this. So yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, much more reasonable. I am also, as always, pretty much joined by Dan. Say hello, Dan.
Hi. Hello, Emma.
So this is Dan's 9th episode in a row. Is that correct, Dan?
Oh, man, one more for the jacket, huh? What color is it going to be?
It's going to be bonfire hot pink.
Nice.
All right, let's get into the episode.
Dan's going to be a highlighter pen. Let's go.
And welcome back. We are going to jump directly into the news. It's been actually kind of a slower news week the last 2 weeks, I feel like. But we do have some different topics to talk about, starting off with, as always, Wizards of the Coasts and content continue to not get along as well as they could. We have two like content creator related program things to talk about today. The first thing is the like pre-show, pre-release-ish streamer event for new sets on Arena is back. It hasn't been here for the last two sets. Is it two sets, Dan? Do you know?
Let's see. There was Murders at Karlov Manor, and I don't believe that had a streamer event. And what was the one before that?
Ixalan, that had one, I believe.
Ixalan did have one. I was part of the Ixalan streamer event.
Okay, so we only took one set off. I know a lot of people made a lot of noise about that, so I would assume that's why it's back. Of course, the reason why it was gone was because the person who handled kind of like Arena to content creator relations, the person who was in charge of, as they called them, Arena activations, was one of the people laid off at Wizards of the Coast during the big Hasbro layoffs late last year. So probably not somebody dedicated to this anymore, but it was popular enough for them to bring it back. The kicker is there doesn't seem to be that many people, which is a big change of pace because it does seem to me like they used to kind of let whoever wanted to be in as long as they had an online presence. Emma, does this make sense to you?
It makes sense that it's back, which is great because the streamer event is a really good way to advertise the set. it's a good way to advertise Magic Arena, which is something that Wizards is very much interested in. It is a shame that the list has been reduced. From what I can gather, it's just a lot of the big names and the Magic Ambassadors that are in at this time, and it's mostly American-focused, which isn't surprising. However, whoever's taking charge of this, this is just a guess, they are just like scorching the earth and then building it back up again. So more people will be involved in it as we go through more standard releases. So you can expect the Bloomborough one to have more people in it than before. I've had some conversations with the UK PR rep for WotC's. It's like a PR firm, and they work with Wizards, and they do all the communication and stuff. They've said they're looking to expand it with Bloomborough, but this time around, just because it was just such a short turnaround, they had to reduce it, but also just add the big names and add the Magic Ambassadors. But yeah, I'm glad it's back because it's just such good content for creators, and it just gives a really good idea of what people can expect in the set, especially, a set that's big as Thunder Junction.
Dan, do you get to participate in this one?
No. Well, I don't know, I guess, because I know that people as soon or as recently as this morning are still getting emails from people on whether or not they're going to be in the program or not. I am a Magic Ambassador, if you didn't know in the audience. But yeah, I normally all of the Ambassador program is involved in it. I don't know exactly what is going on with it. I know that, like Emma said, it is the person who's was running this is no longer working there, that is sort of in an in-between state, and they are looking to revamp things in the future, but as far as I know at the moment, I am not involved in it, and it's kind of a bummer because it really is one of my favorite things to do. I love to play Limited, and it's so much fun to be able to showcase a new set for people. It's a lot of fun.
It is kind of one of those funny and fun events where it's just yeah, I'm going to hop on. So I know Dan, you or other people that I know, more from the CEDH community, there's a great clip out there of known CEDH grinder comedian MTG. He's just participating in this event. I imagine Ian doesn't play that much Limited, but he's just playing, having fun. And then he gets matched up against LSV. How do you think that went? It's some of the fun of those events. It's just all right, we have CEDH content creators messing around with the new set, and you get to play Limited against LSV.
It truly is the magic of it. I was one of the more recent ones. It might have been the Ixalan event where I was having a really great match with somebody, and then someone in my chat was like, "Oh, you're facing Jimmy Wong right now." And I was like, "Oh yeah, you're right. I am facing Jimmy Wong right now."
Yep, that is a lot of fun. I'm glad that they brought it back. I enjoy watching those events, and I was kind of sad when it went away. I kind of rolled my eyes at how big of a deal people were making of it. They were like, "I cannot believe Wizards got rid of this thing and that they haven't scrambled of themselves to bring it back," because the person who was responsible for it was laid off, and it probably wasn't exactly a Wizards of the Coast choice given what we know about the Hasbro's layoffs. So glad it's back, and I hope they continue to expand it again, because the more people who get to participate in that the better, because then there'll be more people to play games within the specific streamer event, and it'll be all a great time. Speaking of things that Dan is involved in, there's also now the Magic the Gathering Online Creator Program. This is honestly, I think, a really awesome thing. Daybreak, the company that took over Magic the Gathering Online from the internal Wizards team a couple years ago now, it's been a shockingly long time since that happened, has been doing, by all regards, great at running MitGo and actually supporting it and bringing it up. A lot of people thought that when they were handing it off to Daybreak Games, a lot of people were like, "Daybreak Games, they're the company you hand a sunsetted MMORPG off to, so you can technically keep the lights on," but they don't do anything. They just technically keep the lights on. Daybreak has been putting a lot of work into Magic the Gathering Online, and the latest instance of that is the creation of the Magic the Gathering Online Creator Program. It's an official creator program for Magic the Gathering Online. It's pretty flush. The people in the program get an all-access account. They're going to have some exclusive events, like an event called Creator Clash, play points, grants, and giveaways for your community. If you're in the program, there's going to be play point giveaways that you can do on your Twitch stream or whatever Play points, of course, being the currency that you can use to enter leagues and other such events. They also said in the future, you know, maybe early access to new features, help them out with beta testing of cool new stuff. All of that, that itself is very exciting, and I'm happy that they're finally doing something akin to that. And Dan got into the program. Dan, are you going to be streaming so much Magic the Gathering online now?
Yeah, honestly, I think my content might make a pretty big switch into the MTGO sphere, because there is a lot of really exciting opportunities with this. This is something that people have been waiting for years and years and years. Like pretty much as long as people have been making Magic YouTube content. This is just a huge amount of support from Daybreak, which is super, super awesome. It's going to really open the doors to letting people know how cool MTGO is. Basically, my entire application to Daybreak Games was, I have a really big following of people who love to play EDH, who have never been on MTGO before, who would love to see really cool Eternal formats like Vintage, like Legacy, and even see EDH like on MTGO. And like, this is a great opportunity to open up the doors to a really huge new audience. And I totally believe that. I think that a lot of people are about to find out that MTGO is an extremely cool way to play Magic.
Emma, I think you should apply for the MTGO creator program.
I mean, I did and I got in. I've just kept it quiet.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got two of three.
Yeah. It's really exciting. I echo a lot what Dan said. It's going to be really fun, and Daybreak have been really smart about who they accept to the program. They've accepted a lot of like Magic Arena streamers as well, so they can start streaming Magic online and make that more popular and get more people involved. So really creative and fun way to do it, and I'm really excited to do some stuff with Magic online too. I think the program is going to be sweet, and excited to see what happens.
Going to be playing a lot of Pauper, I hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And Cube.
And Cube, of course, and Cube. Dan, you're going to be playing a lot of Cube? All access,
I realized that, one, of course, Em and I are going to get to play Pauper together, but also Em and I are going to get to Cube together, yeah. Which I think is a much more friendly experience, and I can't wait for that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I am happy that Daybreak is putting so many resources into Magic the Gathering online, because it is kind of the home for all things online Magic these days that is not explicitly like latest set draft / sealed and standard, and like soon to be Pioneer is probably going to largely move over to Arena. They're working that way, but like right now, if you want to play Legacy, if you want to play Vintage, if you want to play most Cubes, you know, all that kind of stuff, if you want to play Pauper online, all of this stuff, and Modern, not to mention Modern, you gotta go to Magic the Gathering online for it. And of course, one of the big problems that MTGO has had historically is that it is kind of intimidating. It does a lot less hand holding and whatever than, say, Arena does, because it just works exactly how the Magic rules does, including all of the stuff that when we're playing Magic in person, we can kind of fuzz or shove past or both assume that we're doing things that Magic the Gathering online can't assume. But I hope that people can push past that barrier. You know, I let that barrier keep me from playing a lot on Magic the Gathering online for like 5 years. And I'm finally playing a lot more of it now, and I'm happy that I did. So if you're listening to this, I think that you should just jump in, watch Emma and Dan's new Magic the Gathering online content that they will surely be producing through the Magic the Gathering online creator program. The kicker with the program, like Emma said, I would agree with that framing. They're being like pretty smart and strategic about the people that they let in to the program. But what that has also done is left a lot of people out of the program, because there's only so many slots. You can't give everyone in the world an all access pass, you know, at minimum. You know, you can't. An all access pass, of course, listener being you have access to all the cards on Magic the Gathering online when you're playing and stuff. Cool, exciting. People have perceived some of the who's in, who's out to be kind of arbitrary. I would not, from what I have seen.
It's arbitrary if you don't know very much about marketing.
Yes, it's arbitrary if you don't know very much about marketing or public relations or what brings value to a company through partnerships. There are like a couple of people or whatever that I would love to see in that are not in.
There were definitely some people I was pretty shocked to see off the list.
Yeah. Exactly. But also, like, the community manager, I know who the community manager is who's running everything. He is relatively new to the company and is also not super duper plugged in into the Magic the Gathering online scene all that much, if I had to guess. I'm sure that will come with time. The big kind of bungle they made around it in my mind was they said, all right, guys, here's the application. Go crazy. Somebody specifically asked, hey, is there an application cutoff? They said no. Within 24 hours, they closed applications because there were so many applications that were turned in, which then left some, you know, some major prominent Magic the Gathering online content creators, grinders, etc., that definitely like could, would, and should be in the program, left out in the cold because they didn't, you know, they were like, cool, I'm really busy today because I have a life, because it opened up like on a random Monday or something like that.
It's like middle of the day on a random day.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, okay, cool, I'm editing the content that I make for my full-time YouTube channel. I'll apply tomorrow. And then they were closed. So that caused some kerfluffles. But they are now like reviewing case-by-case applications. You know, DM us and you're like, hello, I have a 30,000 subscriber MitGo YouTube channel. They're like, okay, you're in.
Yeah, yeah,
it is a frighteningly small team that's working on this too. It is, I think, a maximum of like 2 to 3 people who are going through all these applications. So before everyone gets their pitchforks for,
there is a dedicated Discord channel on the MitGo Discord server that is just application status, and you just put your application in, and they just say yes or no, and you just type it out, and you just find out then. So they are still doing stuff. They're just keeping it to the server as opposed to a Google Doc.
Yep, that makes sense. And just so you know, listener, I did not apply. I did not apply. I was not. I did not apply. Therefore, I could not be rejected.
That's a cover. So
I
have nothing to be mad about.
If I applied to the program, like one of two things would happen. I would either have to start actually making content with Magic the Gathering online, which I am much more interested in doing now than I was at the time the applications came out. We'll talk about that a little more later. Or I would just do the much less ethical thing of staying on the gravy train for as long as possible until they kick me out. Like how many pauper leagues can I get in before they turn off my all access pass?
A really smart thing that Daybreak are doing. They're adding way more challenges like throughout the week now as well. So you can play challenges like most days of the week, which is really cool because often these would like be full on the weekend. So they're expanding it. And it's also a good time when these creators are coming in due to the program. They can start hammering challenges and streaming them throughout the day during like their work week, which is also really cool.
Emma, really quick, what is the difference in between like a Magic the Gathering Online challenge and what most people I think are familiar with on Magic the Gathering Online, which is the league where you played like 5 matches on your own time? What's the difference between that and a challenge?
A Magic Online league is, as you say, it's 5 matches. You randomly pair against people. See, it's similar as like an FNM. So you play X rounds and then you get some amount of prizes. A challenge is an event that's usually capped, but it's an event where a lot of the skill Magic players play in it, and the prize support tends to be pretty good. And the prize support in Magic Online is treasure chests. And these treasure chests, you either open them and you get random stuff, and that's great. Sometimes you get some supplement commander cards or weird and wonderful stuff, and this is the only way you can get them. But a lot of the time, most people will sell these treasure chests for ticks, and they use those tickets to buy cards, get play points and stuff like that. It's like the in-game currency. So challenges are a really good way if you want to get better at Modern, Pioneer, Pauper, Legacy, Vintage, whatever. It's a good way to like get better at it because you're playing against like the MTGO grinders that do this every week without a beat and top 8. You know, it's a really good way to get good.
That makes a lot of sense, Emma. Thank you for explaining that. So now that we know what challenges are, let's talk about a challenge, specifically a Pioneer challenge that took place over the weekend. It was a Pioneer challenge was won by notable Pioneer grinder at Bill Siv on Twitter. They won a Pioneer challenge playing a Jeskai deck of some kind that they were so proud of, they decided to post about it on Twitter.com. And by doing so, they really did it to themselves. Somebody immediately hopped into the replies and was like, hey, buddy, Hey, buddy, what was up with that round when you exploited a Magic the Gathering online bug / known exploit to try to beat me? Because you were ahead of me on the in-game chess timer, and you did this bug you could do to make a ton of game actions to run down my timer because I have to respond to all of them. What was up with that? Twitter user Bill Sive, who won, decides to hide the reply.
Well, Cal, what was up with that?
I don't know. They've never answered what was up with that. But unfortunately, this guy bragged about winning a Pioneer Challenge on Twitter.com. But it turns out he cheated it to win at least one of the matches. That's a known exploit that you're not supposed to do. They used that to run somebody out of time on their timer so that they would win the match after having gone up, I assume, 1-0 in games. So like they already won a game and they were going to lose a second game, or maybe it may have been the third game as well. But they forced their opponent to run out of their chess clock timer, so they lost the match. And a bunch of people were calling them out on it. And they just decided to use that little Twitter function where you can hide the reply. I don't know how more guilty you could look. Like, you could just reply and be like, oops, my bad. I accidentally created 40 to 50 game actions through a known game exploit. That's on me, bro. Oops.
Once again, I think this all comes back to, like, people should have an anxiety disorder. You'd never get on Twitter bragging about your cheating league win if you had an anxiety disorder.
The thing is, right, this MTGO player has done it in the past.
Okay, known cheater at Bill Sive.
This is from a Fire Shoes tweet, and I'm going to put Fire Shoes down as a credible source because it's Fire Shoes.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, they've done this in the past. So it's not like, hey, whoopsie, I found this thing exploiting priority and how the system works. I'm just going to run out your time. This has likely been done before, and they're just feeling very confident that they're not going to get caught. So they posted it and then they got caught, and hence the, yep, the disappearance of replies.
Yep. And I bet this character, MTGO grinder at Bill Sive, assumes that, like, if you hide a reply on Twitter, no one can ever see it. But there's a button that says show hidden replies. You can just look at the tweets anyways.
Yeah, because we all do it. And it's always pussy in bio. Like, we take that chance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, it's still there. Like, what could be behind this button? Ah, it was the porn bot again. So, yes, in short, a Magic the Gathering online grinder won a Pioneer Challenge, and somebody else caught them with proof cheating using a known bug or exploit in Magic the Gathering Online to win at least one of their matches. Apparently, it's not the first time this person has cheated. I feel like we have so far ended up talking about cheating in Magic the Gathering a fair amount on this podcast. I think this really just like goes to show, and is also a really good reminder, that people will go to basically any length to cheat in a game of Magic the Gathering, even going so far as to abuse known bugs in a program that is supposed to be like as cheat proof as possible. But you're so desperate to do it that you do it in an environment where your opponent can be like, hey, let's check out the game's built-in replay software so we can watch you exploiting the known bug.
The saddest thing is, a lot of times when people cheat, especially in stuff like Magic or in video games or whatever, they're actually really good at the game and they don't need to do it. They just feel so insecure in their ability to do it, they feel like they need to cheat to win. But if they just actually played it as normal, they would probably have won it anyway. That's the sad part of the whole thing.
So in short, the message from this podcast on cheating is get an anxiety disorder and then you'll never have to worry about it.
Exactly. And of course, cheating in Magic is a feature and not a bug.
Okay. Ooh, I like that. No, nice play I'm on keeping that one there.
In, Dan. I'm keeping that one in. I'm keeping that in.
You can't keep pulling it. You gotta do what you gotta do with this one.
I either can keep that one in or I can keep home. All right, we've got one more news topic here, and that's kind of this is my little self-indulgent topic, but it feels like it's finally something worth talking about on the podcast too. And that is kind of, it's been a big couple past days for competitive EDH. Hate it or like it, it seems like it's very well quickly moving towards staying. Of course, one thing that happened over the last weekend was that Punt City 3 happened, the biggest CEDH event yet, I believe. A bunch of people went out to a hotel in Pennsylvania and battled it out over 2 days for their share of quite a lot of money. And it was, of course, as we could have all guessed, taken down by Rograk and Silas Wren, everyone's favorite Grixis Turbo deck, piloted by friend of the show, Tad. Congrats, Tad. Or as I accidentally called him in a Discord, Taff, and therefore everyone on Twitter was repeating Taff over and over again in the congratulations, like post replies and stuff. That was my fault. Cool to see Punt City 3. Dan, you were out there for most of the weekend, right? Because it's in your hometown.
Yeah, I was at Punt City this weekend, and it was one of the best CDH events that I've been to. The East Coast CDH crowd is notoriously good for traveling all over the place, and there was just an absolutely huge crew of people, from content creators to some of the biggest people from even Europe. There was quite a few of the European crew came out,
which is crazy. Yeah.
And the vibes were just absolutely immaculate. It was like a high school reunion party, honestly. Everyone was there and very excited to have some very good fun playing Magic with their friends. And honestly, the CEDH events are starting to look more and more like sanctioned Magic events, where just like the crew of people are really getting to know each other. There's a big family vibe. Everyone is very cool with each other. And it's just, big Magic, big gathering.
All right, the next time we get all the Euro people out, we're going to have to bring Emma out to Punt City 5 and get Emma to play CEDH.
Hey, I might be playing on Magic Online, because there's some other news. It's part of the creator program.
Exactly. Big news as well. As of today, big news coming out today, Daybreak announced that something that is coming to Magic the Gathering Online is Commander Leagues. They have both friendly and competitive leagues coming. Obviously, I'm more interested in the competitive league. It'll be three like single game matches with four players in them that you'll play. Like Emma talked about earlier, the leagues are just like you enter the league, and then on your own pace, you can kind of play out your allotment of games for the league. For this one, there will be three games in the league. The prizes are not incredible. If you like win out on three wins, you'll get a little over double of your play points back, and you'll get two treasure chests, and you'll also get a trophy. Woohoo! We love a little BitGo trophy. However, I think the implications of this are like a lot bigger or whatever than the prizes you can win. Cause like the prizes on normal leagues aren't great either. That's why people are really excited to play challenges and stuff, cause that's where the prizes are. But what this does mean is that, especially if Daybreak continues to improve how well multiplayer works on Magic the Gathering Online, it means that meaningful CEDH testing will become like much faster and easier. You can get a lot more games in on Magic the Gathering Online faster than you can in person. Yes, exactly. In theory, we'll get deck list dumps from deck lists that go 3-0 for the leagues, which will help us get a bigger insight into what decks do well. I mean, if the leagues are popular, I would guess we would very quickly have more meaningful deck list data within just like 3 months than we have of our last 2 years of Command Tower data existing, which is awesome. Some people have raised potential. Maybe this means they'll make CEDH challenges in the future as well. I don't know if they'll do that or not, but if it's successful, I mean, Daybreak has seemed to be willing to lean into whatever is actually doing well. So we'll see. And then, of course, with more data, more games, more people playing, that probably means faster iteration on the format, which is pretty sick. Top to bottom, pretty awesome. So, Emma, you CEDH League tomorrow?
Maybe. Throw me a deck.
All right. How about five color Najeela? Good stuff. How do you feel about that one?
Sure.
Pog.
Pilot.
It is. You just cast Najeela and win the game.
My only concern with Commander and CDH, like having more of a consistent like place on Magic Online, is that potentially runs the chance of these universes beyond like collaborations not getting on Magic Online. And obviously, There's going to be some like Fallout cards that might be really cool. There could be some, you know, other Universes Beyond stuff coming up that might be like really impactful for CDH and people can't play them. On the flip side, this might give Wizards the leverage when it comes to like sorting out these deals with these collaborators for Universes Beyond, going, hey, can we have this on Magic Online? We have a Commander League, we have Commander Challenges and stuff. We need to integrate that. So hopefully it means something can change, because we don't want a Warhammer situation again. And there's no timeline on the Fallout cards that are starting to make an impact in Legacy. And there's that segregation once again, which you don't want.
Yep. Currently, CEDH is very lucky in that, like, there doesn't seem to be any Fallout cards that are super awesome. The Warhammer decks, Magnus Carlsen, one of the face commanders for the 40K decks.
I think you butchered that name.
Probably Magnus. It's
Magnus. Marnius Calgar.
Yes, oh my gosh.
Magnus Calgar.
Cal, say a name properly on the Herald Torn podcast challenge.
Is that the S? Cetera, is that the Esper legend? The one that makes
the token one. Yes. Yeah. Turns out a card that lets you draw cards whenever you make tokens is really good with cards like Smothering Tithe, for example. Yeah.
Imagine if we didn't have access to like the Lord of the Rings cards from Commander, like not having access to Orcish Bowmasters or the One Ring would be like a huge deficit in most people's deck lists.
Yeah, exactly. So far we're lucky that I think like the beginning and end of very impactful cards that are missing from the format, like, is Marnius Calgar. If you really want to play Marnius Calgar,
not many
people do, but it does put up results. I was actually looking at the EDH top 16 results recently, and has one of the highest conversion rates for a deck that's not in like the top 10.
You can get the card, but the selling of those pre-cons have ended now, so there's only like a limited supply. Like, and you have to get them from bots and stuff, unless you're a creator. I think you might get them. I don't know.
But like you say, Cal, I think this is definitely the beginning of like a revolution in CDH deck building, because traditionally decks have been built and maintained by people who are literally like our peers. Like when I was getting into CDH, it was fellow 19-year-olds who were the heads of deck lists and the heads of their discords and things like that. We're about to have potentially, I mean, it doesn't necessarily easily translate from people being able to do this on MTGO to people actually doing it, but it does present the ability for thousands more people to be able to get into this meta and start testing decks in a much quicker fashion and be able to like get some really meaningful data and really change the way that we think about deck slots and decks overall.
Okay, update about Marnius Calgar. Like Emma said, you can buy him, and I was worried that he would maybe be expensive, but no. Marnius Calgar was the face commander of the deck that people were buying like 4x of to get their Triumph of St. Catharines. So Marnius Calgar, a card that I know no Legacy player wants, currently will run you about a sick quarter on Magic the Gathering Online. So
it's a great commander in CDH or in casual. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool card.
Yep. The one other really impactful card, not even really impactful card, Sacrifice is a card missing from Magic the Gathering Online. So Dargo Timna gamers, sorry, one of your best cards is not a Magic the Gathering Online. Otherwise,
wow, no love for the Tasker.
The whole format's pretty much there. What's Tasker?
I don't know. It's something that Silumgar eats or something.
Okay. In conclusion, for this little CEDH section, another little bit of news that dropped today. A CEDH tournament organizer over in Europe called CEDHPT was announced today that they were reached out to by Wizards of the Coast about official prize support. Like Wizards of the Coast wanted to give them prize support for a CEDH event. Never something that I personally anticipated would have happened in the near or far future.
Not in a million years, to be honest.
But CDHPT said that they had a call and they declined the offer for their upcoming soon events because, you know, it came with the anticipated kicker of if we're offering support, it would have to be like a all real card event. No proxies. Makes sense for Wizards. But as we've said, well, not on this podcast, but as I said in many other venues before, proxies are kind of important for making CDH accessible. And I think there is definitely room for no proxy CDH events. Star City Games is currently having a lot of luck running them. But CDHPT then also said they had a second call with Wizards of the Coast, and they said, yeah, let's try to make this work for like a specific future event where we'll just run like a one-off non-proxy event with wizard support and that kind of stuff. So they're working towards that. Why did I write down? I wrote down in this, the notes, I felt this is coming for a while and it's cool to see the potential. I haven't seen this coming for a while. I thought Wizards of the Coast would never really acknowledge CDH much as a format. But on the same day, we've gotten news that Wizards is in touch with tournament organizers about official support. And we've got Daybreak bringing competitive Commander Leagues to Magic the Gathering Online. So who knows?
Be cool to see CDH events at like Magic Cons. Like sanctioned ones. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be very sick. I would play in one of those personally.
Yeah. You wouldn't.
This is an absolutely huge thing. I mean, like we said, this coming from our beginnings in CDH, where it was, there couldn't have been more than 10,000 people who played CDH, I feel like, in maybe like 2016 to 2018. To get to this level where WotC is reaching out to the CDH players and be like, hey, we want to help you run events or give you prize support for events. Huge change. It's honestly incredible to see.
I would heavily agree. And all right, we talked about the news for a long time. And like I said, a little bit of a slower news week. So let's go ahead and move into the product watch. Welcome back to the Product Watch. This episode, only one introduction to the Product Watch. And let's just go right into our top level item, which is that Outlaws of Thunder Junction set is pretty much here. It's all been revealed. It looks like a fun Magic the Gathering set. I think we kind of talked about that a little bit last week. Wasn't something we were as excited about. After the big preview 2 weeks ago, maybe we were a little bit more excited about it. Now that the set's almost here, how do we feel? Besides all of those set codes, I'm over all the set codes. I'm over hearing confusion about all of the set codes. Besides that, Emma, how do we feel?
I'm excited for the cards. I'm not excited about the backdrop and the theme. It's just not my taste.
Makes sense.
I'm not big into Western or Wild Wild West, so I can skip this. This is fine. There's some cool cards coming. I think it will impact competitive Magic in a massive way. There's a lot of powerful things because you've got the big score as well, which is also standard legal. So basically, you've got like two standard sets coming in one big release. So I'm really excited to see what happens. I think the set is pretty pushed from a competitive standpoint.
Dan?
It's an interesting set. There's a lot of cool cards in it. It is very interesting to see coming off of the heels of Ixalan, which was so carefully paid attention to from the diversity standpoint, that we went into the Wild West theme, which is so inherently tied to the indigenous people of America, to just not have them featured pretty much at all or at all. I mean, I don't want to say definitively because I can't say that I know every single card off the top of my head, but I don't think at all.
I think Annie Flash.
Kind of a faction, yeah.
Annie Flash is okay. The only nod, many, but I haven't looked at the set deeply in a world building sense. But
yeah, it's I don't know. It's interesting. It's a little bit too kitschy for me with just sticking cowboy hats on everybody. But the cards are cool.
We are now 2 for 2 of sets in a row where the main world building shtick is that everyone you love is here and they have a new hat on. So I hope that Bloomborough is just not.
Well, all of capes on them.
All of the characters you love, but they've been furified. I think that's the horror coming to us in Bloomborough.
Duskmorn is horror, not Bloomborough.
Wait, isn't there already a furry Jace though?
They already revealed a furry Jace. I'm concerned.
I think that's going to be the bonus sheet for the Bloomborough is Planeswalkers as the furry selves.
Yeah, everyone's just wearing a little hat. Everyone's just wearing a silly little hat. That's how I feel about it, too. There's some cool card designs. I like a lot of the design place. I like a lot of the design space they're playing around with plot specifically. I think there's some really cool plot cards in the set.
There's a Time Twister with plot, which I thought was extremely interesting. Very powerful card to give plot to.
Yeah, I would agree. There's definitely some cards that look powerful. I'm excited to inevitably jump into it to try to find 5 potential CEDH playables for an article. We'll see how strong it is then. But moving on past Outlaws of Thunder Junction, we do only have one other thing in our product watch. We're well on our way to eradicating product watch as a recurring segment for the show. If there's this few of products, and that is the Equinox Super Drop for 2024. This one is a pretty standard super drop. There's a good bit of Fallout stuff, some really cool artist series stuff. I was specifically kind of looking at one of them, which is one built all around like little dioramas from a diorama artist. That one's really cute, really fun. But much like we predicted when they first announced the new Secret Lair model of limited print run that they'll just sell through and ship immediately, they opened up orders on Monday for this when I looked this morning. So on Tuesday morning, because we're recording on Tuesday, most of the bundles and all of the stock for two of the artist series and also one of the Fallout ones were entirely sold out. And then everything that wasn't sold out was marked as like limited stock left. Kind of stinks. It's been up for a little over 24 hours and most of the super drop is already gone. I don't love that.
Especially when you can make an order of 20 of one secret lair drop. It just encourages scalpers, right? Like, it's not great, but Watsy don't care because they're getting the money anyway, so it doesn't matter the limits and who they sell it to. But it does suck, especially for people who want to pick up the Fallout ones. They're very limited. There's a TV show dropping tomorrow, I believe. So on the April 10th, Amazon have got a TV show for Fallout. You're going to get all these fans of Fallout seeing like magic stuff come up. And it's like, oh, cool, there's a secret lair for Fallout. Let me check that out. Oh, it's sold out. Okay, great, cool. Guess I won't. Like, feels bad.
It's very interesting to me that this is the preferable business model to just having them be unlimited sales for a month or whatever it is and then shipping them out later. I understand that they switched to this model because they can ship them to people sooner. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like this is a better alternative to me. I would rather get my cards in like 4 months and just know that I could get them if I want them. Yeah.
I've seen some people online defending it, saying like, oh, it actually makes Secret Lair special and exclusive again. But no, I feel like cards that you can only buy for a month that will probably never be reprinted again for the history of the game is probably like already exclusive enough, you know?
People hate the reserve list, I thought. Yeah, I thought that was everyone's deal, right? Like, why is everyone so hype on this? I don't get it.
Yep. So, we'll see what happens from here. I'm not exactly surprised that a whole ton of super slick artist series with powerful cards like Aether Vial and really cool Fallout treatments of powerful cards are the stuff to sell out. We'll see about future Secret Lairs. Maybe they just under-anticipated how much demand there would be, which is, of course, another huge danger of the model, right? I thought when there was like limited stock, when they were announced a limited stock, you know, they'd be able to sell through for like a week and then maybe they'd run out. But
it's wild that they sold out the Fallout ones. That's the one you want more of, especially.
Yeah.
Maybe they had That's a deal exactly with like Bethesda thinking. Or whoever owns the Fallout brand. You're only allowed to print X.
Could be.
But it still feels bad.
It just seems like it's leaving so much money on the table from their perspective. Yeah, I don't know.
Yep. So I suppose we shall just have to wait and see. And that is all of the product watch. We got through it in like 8 minutes. Please clap, everyone. And now that we're through with the product watch, that means we only have one segment left. And that is the co-host's notebook. Welcome to the co-host notebook, the wonderful part of the Herald Horn podcasts, where for once, our co-hosts get to decide what we talk about. Emma, what do you have written down in your co-host's notebook today?
So I've been playing a little bit of Stardew Valley. Haven't played as much as I thought I would because I've been kind of busy. But I have been enjoying playing a game I think I've mentioned on the show before called Domekeeper. It is a mixture of a roguelite and a resource management game. So the premise is, you're a little space guy, you're on a planet, you drop down and you live in your home is a dome, basically, hence the name. And you go around digging for resources, building up your dome, protecting it, finding relics. And in between this, you're fighting off waves of aliens that are trying to destroy and sabotage your dome. And as the waves progress, it gets harder. So it's like a resource management and a roguelite built into one. And it's this like 16-bit pixel design. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's just really fun to play for like 45 minutes because you can do a run in about that time. So I've been like hopping in and out of that because it's just easy and bite-sized when I don't really want to commit to like 5 hours talking to cows in Stardew Valley.
That sounds kind of awesome. I might have to check that one good. Out. I'm always on the hunt for some more little roguelike games. But I guess I'll have to check it out. I haven't checked out Dave the Diver yet either, and I said that about Dave the Diver after you plugged Dave the Diver. So I guess we'll just have to see what comes. Anything else in your co-host notebook, Emma?
So I've also been enjoying, I tweeted about this today, it's a show called Game Changer, which is a part of the Dropout like TV show brand company thing. It's one of the few TV subscriptions I actually have because the content is actually really good and it's not like super expensive. Like the money actually goes to these creators. So Game Changer, it reminds me a lot of Taskmaster, but like an American version of it. So they have all these like actors and comedians and writers on, and they just do silly challenges. And each episode is different. The game is different every single time. And Brennan Lee Mulligan's on it quite a bit, and he's hilarious. And it's just really funny to see these creators just like improv on the spot. It's a good time. I recommend checking it out.
Heck yeah. I'll check it out. Dan, will you check it out? Do you watch media?
I've been watching a little bit more media than I usually have. I tried to keep it to a minimum, but yeah, you got me. I might watch some media.
All right. So Emma wrote down Game Changer from Dropout, right?
Yep.
Okay. Game Changer TV show from Dropout. And of course, also cute little indie game, Dome Keeper, which I will check out. Is it on the Nintendo Switch? Yes or no?
I don't think so. It's on Steam. I only play it on Steam, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's on the Switch because it would port pretty well.
Seems like a little Switch-like game. That's why I asked. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Dan, do you have anything in your co-host notebook this week?
Yeah, I have been spending an extraordinary amount of time not playing Magic the past couple of weeks, which has been fantastic. I have not had anybody scheduled on my stream or anything just because I've been forgetting to do it. And I've been really busy with work. So I've been really just putting it off, not really making it a priority at the moment. And it's been nice. I've been spending a ton of time outside and hiking. I just rewatched Boys in the Hood for the first time in a really long time. Have either of y'all seen that movie? Yes.
Not for a while,
it's
but yes.
Highly recommended. I had only watched it like once as a kid, but I was listening to this podcast. I'm forgetting the name of it right now, otherwise I'd shout them out. But they're talking about the making of it. John Singleton was like 19 when he wrote that. Wow. He was like still in college and just about to graduate. There's this great quote where they talked about him being in like the student like study room, and he's just on this computer clacking away and like pacing back and forth and muttering to himself, "I'm writing the best screenplay that anyone's ever written before." And they're talking about it is this huge comparison to what's that Stephen King novel where they find the dead body, or the short story rather, Walking on the Train Tracks? Stand By Me. And I had never recognized that it was a Stand By Me reference at all before, but there's like the whole arc of the movie is like, do you want to see a dead body? But it's just beautifully written, wonderfully acted. Some of the kids are, you know, a little less great than you'd want them to be. This is Ice Cube's first role in a movie ever. Yeah, I know. He's like also 19 years old at the time, maybe a little bit older, like 22, 23. But Lawrence Fishburne is the dad. Angela Bassett is one of the mothers. Just they absolutely carry the movie in terms of the acting. And it is just one of the most heart-wrenching films of all time. It's really, really good. If you haven't seen it, audience members, it's on Netflix right now. Go watch it. It's really, really good.
I cannot say that I personally have seen it, so I'll have to check it out.
It's heart-wrenching. Get ready to cry. Oh, man. I'm crying just thinking about it right now.
And if you're not interested in watching that, you can always watch Ice Cube's cinematic masterpiece, Are We There Yet?
I was wondering which one is he going to pick. There's so many to choose from at this point. Are We There Yet? Indeed a classic. I think probably the peak of his acting game.
It's probably like one of those movies that we don't get anymore that are just dumb.
B movies.
That's how I felt about Boys in the Hood, but I really feel that way about Are We There Yet?
That's fair. But Boys in the Hood is a tearjerker.
Yeah, it's a really well done movie. It's very truthfully told. John Singleton is from the area that he's talking about. He would not let Columbia Productions like take it and give it to another director because he really wanted it to be like true to form to where he's from and the story that he was trying to tell. So yeah, it's just a really well done and authentic story.
All right. So there you have it, listener. Here is your homework for the next 2 weeks. Check out Game Changer. Check out Boys in the Hood and play Domekeeper, available on Steam and possibly other platforms. As we wrap up the episode, Dan and or Emma, do you have anything else for our listeners? Emma, you go first.
Don't really have much, really. Basically, daylight savings, get outside in the sun. Evenings are lighter now. Enjoy the springtime. Best time of the year.
Emma, where are you going to do MTGO stuff when you start doing it?
Good question. Once I get the stuff free, which I don't know when that is yet, but we should definitely jam some games.
Nobody does.
Yeah, like I signed up, but the account is still the same account. So once we do stuff, we should do some stuff together, like Herald Horn adjacent content, maybe.
That'd be fun.
For sure. And then I was trying to get you to plug a Twitch or something, but you didn't do it.
I have a Twitch. I can't remember what it's called, but... One thing I would like to plug on TCG Player Infinite at the moment, Yeoman 5 has done his 50 decks for X standard release. Outlaws of Thunder Junction is coming up. So Yeoman's done in total 69 decks for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which is nice, covering standard, Pioneer, and modern. I recommend checking it out because Yeoman just puts a buck ton of effort into these and just churns them out in like a week. I don't know how the guy does it.
Anything from you, Dan?
Yeah, I can't say that I'm streaming right now or that I have any streams lined up, but go subscribe to me on twitch.tv/moderatelyanonymousMTG because I will be legally obligated to stream MTGO there soon enough, as well as CDH and other cool content. If you do enjoy CDH and other cool content like that, go check out my YouTube channel, moderatelyanonymousMTG. You can find me on all of the social platforms at the same @. And do not try to find me in person, although I make it pretty easy because I talk about where I live all the time.
All righty. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And we will see you next time.
That was the Herald Horn.
Hey, it's me again, Cal. I hope you're really enjoying this episode. If you are really enjoying it, consider joining the Brass Section and supporting us on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can help me pay my bills and also the bills of the co-hosts. You'll gain access to our supporter-exclusive show, Heraldic Banter, and you'll also get unceremoniously tossed into our Discord. Check out the link now in the podcast notes to toss us a few bucks. We really appreciate it. And hello, welcome back to the interview half of the show. Today, I am joined by the one and only Chase Carroll, perhaps better known as Mana Curves. Chase, how are you doing today?
I'm doing decently. How are you doing today?
I am also doing decently. Of course, we could do this little song and dance, but what everyone doesn't know is that before we started recording, we were talking about how terrible our days have been. So I yeah. mean.
Okay, thanks for outing my major lie. Yeah.
We're both lying on the podcast. I just wanted everyone to know that both of us are full of untruth. So yeah, I'm glad, you know, but now that we're here, we're doing this, we're doing decently. The worst part of the day is behind us. Now we just get to chat about Magic the Gathering and also about Chase, everyone's favorite variety streamer and podcast editor and article writer. Is that a, are you a, no, not a variety streamer, a Magic streamer.
Yeah, Magic streamer.
Okay.
I honestly thought you were about to say Chase, everyone's favorite Chase.
everyone's favorite person named Chase.
There's not many of us. I'll take it.
That's true. That's true. That's very true. So Chase, before we get into like what is ostensibly going to be our topic, I have to ask you the same question that I've asked everyone else so far, which is obviously the connection we have here is Magic the Gathering. We are on a Magic the Gathering podcast. How did you start your path into playing Magic the Gathering, something that is now effectively your full-time job?
I got into Magic in college with my partner at the time. He had been playing Magic since like its inception, and I wanted to, you know, kind of see what, you know, his favorite hobby was about, and I wanted to have that shared interest. And so I watched him play Commander one night. I thought it was really cool. And then I made him take me to Walmart to buy booster packs because it was like 11 o'clock at night. And then we opened them up at Olive Garden. And then that's how I started playing Magic.
That's Olive Garden?
Yeah, packs at Olive Garden. I'll never forget my rares that I opened. I opened the Felidar Sovereign, the one that wins you the game and four or more life.
That's like a sick rare to open up. It's like, whoa, this can win me the game.
Yeah. And the other one I opened up was the Flip Nissa from Origins.
That's also also a sick card to have opened up.
Okay, yeah, so you breadsticks.
You opened up a Nissa, and yet Chandra is your favorite. Explain.
Okay, so I don't know. It just kind of, it started out weird because I had like six Chandras in a binder one day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wouldn't it be really cool if I could turn this into a deck? And then was it M19 came out that had like all of like the Chandra Planeswalker synergies? And I was like, oh, that weird thought I had could work. And then I made the deck, and then I was like, I like her. She's cool, and I like red. And then I was like, she has red hair, and I have red hair. Therefore, I must like her. And then that's kind of how it happened.
You know, honestly, that kind of tracks. That makes sense to me. You're like, yeah, I'm a redhead. I'm Chandra for real. I'm Chandra in real life.
Yeah, no, not at all.
What? No, you can't conjure fire and fling it around.
I mean, I can, but like that got me an arson charge, so I don't know about that anymore.
So you started playing Magic the Gathering at Olive Garden, over some breadsticks, or maybe just cracking some packs. I don't know. Fast forward like 3 years, because like Origins, I wanted to say it was not that long ago, but I guess it was almost a decade ago at this point, like 8 years or something like that now. That's a pretty long time. That's a lot longer than other people I run into who are like, I've been playing Magic since Ixalan. That's so long.
Yeah.
So what happened next? You obviously liked it. What happened next? How did you, what's like the short version of Chase? They open up packs in an Olive Garden to Chase. They make content full time about Magic the Gathering.
I think like the jump for it was at the time my partner and I split, and I thought I would quit the game, but I really clung to the game as like a vessel for like socialization, because I really struggle with like socializing and interacting with strangers. I get really anxious. And so that really helped me make friends in like card shops and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I started to feel more welcome in the scene and enjoy it. And eventually I just kind of started posting about it on like social media. And I don't even know. Like I just, one day in grad school, I thought it would be really cool to do like an article series connecting Magic and mental health in some way. Mm-hmm. And I started writing for a website randomly. I don't even remember the name of the website, but it was like a very brief article run. And I think it was called like Cabal Therapy or something. And it was just about Magic and mental health. And then ever since then, I've just kind of like kept doing it in some like shape, form, or fashion.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And now you're here. And, you know, for all the things you have done, Chase, I think in my mind, one of the coolest things you've done is you've made a Magic the Gathering deck. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you here about today, if that's okay.
Yes.
You have a Magic the Gathering deck that is made up entirely of secret lair cards. It's all secret lair cards, right?
Yes. Everything down to the basics.
Down to the basics, even? Those are pricey basics.
All the lands. Every single card is a lair. No exceptions.
Okay. Every single card in the deck is a lair. Number one, first off, what's the commander? Is it Sisay?
Yes, Sisay Weatherlight Captain, okay, which is the 5C1.
Yeah, the left-handed five-color Sisay. Okay, yep. That's the commander. How does it win the game? That's the second question I have. Okay, it does win the game.
Yeah.
And the third question I have, Chase, is why?
So I like to buy things. Instead of dealing with my emotions like a normal person, I like to make myself feel better by purchasing stuff. And I just found myself buying like a lot of lairs that had maybe like one card in it that I would use, and then the rest would sit and rot in a binder. And I felt like that was just kind of like a waste of like really gorgeous art and like unique printings. So I randomly one day like was like, I wonder if I could like make a deck entirely out of secret lairs. And like I posted a tweet about it or whatever, being like, is this possible? And then a month later, they revealed like the left-handed April Fool's Lair with Sisay, and I was like, oh, I can do this. I could do this. And so I started gathering stuff together, and you'd be surprised at how many like really good cards are printed in secret lairs, especially for Commander.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It does always amaze me, like every secret lair like has at least one really good card in it.
Yeah.
And then like three other stinkers.
Yeah, excluding that one Lord of the Rings lair with like the like Galadriel's vial or whatever.
It's like five stinkers. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That one, I don't know what they were thinking with that one. That one they really missed on that one. So you made this secret lair deck, and I think this points to maybe something a little bit larger, which I want to get at, which is that obviously you really like secret lairs. Over and over again, I've seen you kind of go to bat for the concept of secret lair. Something that I also personally really enjoy a lot, but a lot of people online are, I would say, more medium on would be a a gracious interpretation of how many other people view secret lairs. I would say they're medium on it. What is it about it that's for secret lairs for you that like really hit? Because like, yeah, you said you like to spend money on stuff. Yeah, me too. And it's like a cool concept for a deck. But I know you also have a lot of secret lair stuff that just like isn't for the deck because you like love the product line and love the concept about it. What about it for secret lair is it that like really hits for you?
I really like seeing, you know, quote unquote, like non-conventional art be featured like in like Magic cards, because usually when we think of like Magic art, we think of very, you know, like statuesque or like very, you know, serious art, which is all beautiful and I love it. But I really like seeing the limitations kind of taken away for what can constitute as, you know, Magic art. And I really like that. I like being able to see colors that you wouldn't normally see. Like I'm a huge lover of seeing like pinks in like Magic cards. There's like this one like blue white fairy card from like the Lorwyn block or whatever that I'm obsessed with because it's like the most gorgeous pink, and you just don't see stuff like that in art that much. And so like you can see stuff in like secret lairs with that, especially with stuff like, you know, like Wizard of Barge or oh gosh, even just any of them, really. Just there's like this one that's like a collector oof. That's like this weird pink guy holding up a card, and it's just weird shapes. I mean, or those lands that are just basically just like construction paper mountains. It's just, you know, you wouldn't see that normally on a Magic card, but you know, they're giving artists a chance to like have their work be on a card, and I love it. I just think it's really cool to see unique art represented.
Yeah, I think that's like, to me, the really cool thing about it, too. Also, like, getting to see awesome art from awesome artists, and especially a lot of treatments that we basically would never have gotten to see otherwise, like past like the artists we never would have gotten to see otherwise. They've gotten really inventive with a lot of the graphic design and a lot of the art styles present and all that kind of stuff. It used to be that, you know, the most inventive art we'd get on Magic cards was like Seb McKinnon, right?
Yeah.
Or like before Seb, like Man, all the canceled artists. I tell you what.
Well, Seb, Nils Ham is another one.
Yeah, Nils Ham. Yeah.
Rebecca Gay, stuff like that.
Yeah, Rebecca Gay. The next one that my brain went to was Therese Nielsen, and I was like, no, not that one. No. Yes, exactly. So now we get to see all this really cool, really awesome stuff. Do you have any particularly strong feelings about the business model?
Yes, I really do.
Okay, let's hear them. How do you feel about the business model?
So earlier you were like, you know, I've like really gone to like bad about Secret Lairs. And I think like in the past, I would have said like, yeah, definitely. But like, particularly now, I find myself to be a little bit frustrated with the current model, particularly because in the past, the lairs were, print to run, like basically, you know, there's a time limit and you can buy within that time limit and you didn't have to worry about anything. And, you know, you can get it and it's cool. You can wait a week within the period and you can get it. And then they made a recent change where it's now a limited print run. And so now there's the option for things to sell out quickly. And for me, I do not like that. For a number of reasons. And I find it very frustrating because there, you know, I've had people, because I like talking about Secret Lairs, and there are people who I've chatted with just at cons and stuff about, you know, how they would have to like wait for a certain pay period because they couldn't like get a lair because of like the way their pay period was or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that's not really an option, especially because you said it correctly. Usually every lair has one really good card. And I feel like, you know, to a certain extent, if one of those lairs pops up again, you know, one of the ones like the Kellogg's Loops one with like the Mystic Remora, or like the Riot one with the foil Ristic Study, you know, if one of those pops up again, I think that might be an issue of either selling out and people not getting it at all, or, you know, a bot issue with resellers, because we do see a lot of that. Or we could, you know, have a repeat of the, you know, the advent calendar debacle, where that was a nightmare because I only wanted one and I end up accidentally purchasing, I wanted to say, four or five.
Which
I did
then
not
like
mean to do that.
Yeah, on accident, which then stopped like four other people from being able to buy the one they wanted because it was limited stock. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's like my main issue with like the business model as is right now.
Yeah, it is. That has definitely been an interesting transition. We've only seen a couple limited availability layers before they made the complete swap over to the model. And then even since they made the complete swap over to that model, the one very in-demand layer they knew, Sheldon's Spellbook, they knew it was going to be very in-demand. They did it. Pre-order print to production rather than sticking with the model. Because I think they successfully recognized maybe that it was going to be that big of a deal. But
yes.
Yeah, I share the exact same reservations on the business model myself. It's kind of a wicked problem, though, because there was problems with like the old model, too, which we ran into a lot, especially with some of the. Well, I think like the poster child for the problems that the first model had was the heads I win, tails you lose.
Yeah.
Pre-con deck, which was an outlier. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't exactly the norm for lairs to take over a year to get to people from when they pre-ordered them.
Yeah.
But it feels to me like there has to be some kind of middle ground that they could have found between pre-order print. You know, print to demand pre-orders, then taking forever to get to people versus, oh, you get your stuff in a week and a half because we already printed all of it and this is all we're printing.
Well, even then with that, like, I remember when they made the announcement, they made an announcement specifically saying, like, the reason why we're doing this is so that we can ship to people faster. However, the first run, which is a drop I recently purchased, like, I think two of them. I got the serial one, and it was, like, the black and white whatever cards. I don't even know the name of it. But that one did not come until a month later, whereas before the change, it was possible to see a lair delivered to your house maybe in 2 to 3 weeks. So even then, like, we've only had one example of it, but like, it was faster the old way, and the new way currently has not been faster. So I'm really trying to understand the change. It just doesn't seem to kind of grok with me. Like, maybe we'll have another drop happen soon, and then, you know, the shipping will happen within a week, you know, but I just, right now, as is, I don't see it.
Yep, for sure, for sure. And I do wonder, it seems to be like, eventually they figured out, oh, we can print X amount of them and ship those out immediately and then print out the rest of the pre-orders. And then I would guess they got like burnt on that one too many times. You know, they're still handing out some secret lairs from a couple years ago at events. So
definitely, I will say that. I mean, you're not wrong. I've seen a handful of like the lands ones pop up or something. But like the one I find really funny in terms of like a drawback of this new print thing is with that black and white lair that I talked about. The misprint of a counterspell being printed at sorcery speed.
Yes.
And because it was a limited print run, they already had it
they
printed.
Already had the entire production run wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they couldn't go back and change it. And so I went to buy it the hour that it dropped because I was nervous I wouldn't get it. And it was discounted, I think, by like $5,
five
maybe
bucks.
$8.
Yeah.
And it said, you know, like, because we messed up, we're giving a discount, like in the description of the lair. And I was like, you know, yep,
exactly. You could have simply not had to give a discount on the lair if you'd done this print to production, print to print to pre-orders. Have you thought about that one? Was Into the Ghost?
Yeah, it's. I don't know.
Yep. Oh, for sure, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So that's how you felt about the business model. You feel that way about the business model. You enjoyed the old one more.
Yeah.
Than the new one. But we have not gotten to see the new one very much because the one meaningful secret lair drop they've done since, they abandoned the business model as a one-off thing. So we'll see what happens next. We'll see. I would like to see how long it'll take for everyone to get their Sheldon spell books. My evil side wants to know how long will it take everyone to get their Sheldon spell books. My brain says a very long time.
My brain says a very long time too. Because I bought mine like the day it dropped.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, I don't know why my brain is telling me this, but for some reason my brain is going May. Like, I feel like I might get it in May. I don't know why.
That's pretty quick.
Way. That's a month and a half. That's 2 months. It's March. April, May. It's 2 months.
I guess that feels pretty quick for me for a print to demand product, but I don't know. That's just me. I was thinking like 8 months. That's what my definition of a long time in my brain was.
That's fair. But then again, like layers used to take forever to get to us. And then it started going, you know, 4 weeks, then three weeks. And then some people even got theirs within 2 weeks. So in my head, I'm like, wow, I'm used to 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's fair. That's what you're used to. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Business model, be a changing. It does limit or perhaps impact your enjoyment of the secret layers. I do gotta ask, how do you feel about the less legible ones? I think those are ones that also kind of get a lot of flack from people. Like the more recent one in my brain is like the Hydra one that a bunch of Hydras with, in my opinion, extremely cool art, that the art also included a bunch of very stylized words for the name and the mana cost and the rules text. How are the vibes there?
It's a bit of mixed feelings for me because, you know, on one hand, again, I like seeing art like that pop up and have that unique treatment, and even finding ways to have the envelope pushed with, you know, text being included and changed and altered and stuff. I mean, like, this might not even, it's not even a secret lair, but like another example is like the One Ring from like the holiday one. Like, that one's like gorgeous, but it's also a nightmare to read, which is, on the other hand, why I'm also not a fan of it. It's a mixed bag for me, because a big thing of I've been trying to like emphasize lately is like accessibility for cards, especially even like accessibility for stuff on stream, like using clear large things to like indicate and simplify things. And then you look at like that one example you gave, like the Hydras. They are really hard to look at, not because they're ugly, but because like it's just
a lot.
There's a lot going on. It's very busy. Yep. And especially with like the stylized text, it's really rough. I know, for example, there's a one layer featuring Grist, the Hunger Tide. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I love it, but my eyes actually glaze over a little bit because my eyes don't know where to focus.
Yep.
And so
the art for it is extremely cool, but then yes. I have no clue where the words are.
Exactly. Yep. So it's like, I guess I got to memorize this card so I can tell people what it does, because I'm not going to be like, I demand you read this weird Rorschach painting of a thing. It's rough.
Yeah, that's very fair. Mm. Okay, fine. A reasonable opinion upon that. I'll give you that. I'll give you have a reasonable opinion, Chase. You have one reasonable opinion about Secret Lair.
Thank you.
Ultimate question. Mm-hmm. Your favorite Secret Lair they've done so far? I was going to ask you your least favorite, but I kind of like wrote in my mind the Lord of the Rings one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's your least favorite or not, but you can tell me what your least favorite one is too, if you know what that is off the top of your head.
Honestly,
and why?
I'd honestly have to think, because I think like I feel like it almost shouldn't even count for the Lord of the Rings one, because it's not even like, I don't think that's anybody's favorite.
No,
layer. I'm so sorry to say that.
No,
but like,
it's such
like a bad one that I don't even think it could be counted.
It's just like it's not even, it's like offense. It's just like boring bad. It's not even like, I don't know.
Yeah, I have feelings about it, truly. I have two, it's really hard because I keep teetering back and forth between my two favorites. But I do have like two strong contenders for favorite. Just in terms of like, art, in terms of card quality too. The first one is the Black is Magic Secret Lair. Mm-hmm. I think that one was in honestly as close as you can get to a perfect lair. Mm-hmm, I really think so. The art was phenomenal. It had a good like spread of cards that were playable and just high quality. You had like the Gorgeous Ponder, the Soul Ring, you had the Teferi, you had the Teferi's Protection. It cultivate, like it just featured so many well sought after and playable cards that also featured beautiful art. I remember getting it as a gift and I was like, I'm obsessed with this. It took forever for me to replace the Soul Ring in my Secret Lair deck because I could not find another Soul Ring Secret Lair I loved more than that one. The other one I really like is the Pride Across the Multiverse Lair. Again, just because the spread of the cards I really liked, you know, it was really good quality in my opinion. Also, I loved the art treatments. I also love like the representation of like, you know, queer characters in Magic. I thought that was amazing because again, beautiful Soul Ring. You know, it has a gorgeous Ring of Pride flag. You had the Mana Confluence, which is another phenomenal card. I never thought I would ever own a foil Mana Confluence, but I got a foil one from that. You know, you have the gorgeous Alesha. You know, you also have like Collective Voyage with like Chandra and Nyssa. It just featured really stunning art, and both of them just were phenomenal through and through. I none of the other layers that they have printed have really come close to those two for me.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, they really just they do stand alone. I think like the only I think like I'm in the exact same boat as you there, like with those two is like two of my top ones. Think about that Mana Confluence a lot.
Yeah, I love that's
awesome. It looks so cool. It's awesome. And I love the entire Black is Magic one is awesome too. I think the Sheldon one is up there for me now, but that's independent of like a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of stuff connected to that. So
yeah, I don't ever really form an opinion on a lair until I get it in my hands. But that's like this fair. One, like honestly, like with the Sheldon lair, you can even just if you just watch like that little preview video they did, like the amount of like detail and effort and like just the way that it was handled, like you could just tell that a lot of like love and thought was really put into it. It wasn't like, you know, here's a random bunch of good commander playable cards, go forth, you know, like there was so much thought put behind it.
Yep, for sure. Do you have a least favorite? Have you conjured a least favorite in your head?
I kind of have one that I really don't like. I actually, I just sold some of them today to buy that Mox Opal that I really wanted. I don't know the exact verbiage of it, but it was recent. It was from the Lost Caverns drop. Specifically, it featured like the you know, like the alternate art, and it, the lair featured, you know, Admiral Beckett Brass and Alenda and like the Merfolk Kumena. I just don't like that art. And it's just the yellowness of the border. Like, it's not even in terms of like value. Like, there's just like, art is 1,000% objective. Mm-hmm. But when I look at it, I'm like, I feel like, you know, cooler cards could have been chosen, or like, you know, a different treatment or something. But like, even then, like, it reigns supreme. You know, the cherry on top of the nightmarish secret lairs, the ones that shall not be named, is definitely that one Lord of the Rings one. I'm being so honest with you when I say I went into a local video store of mine and I found a VHS tape of like a cartoon. I think it was like a cartoon Hobbit or something. Mm-hmm. And on the back were the same screen caps from the cards. And like, you're like, well, Chase, it's the same movie. It was, but like, if I held
it,
it's
like 1-to-1.
It was 1-to-1. And I was sitting there and I'm like, did they take this off? Did they just see the back of the VHS tape and went, that's what we're doing?
That's what we need. Those are the ones we need. Give them.
I lost my mind in the store and I was,
that's crazy.
I was like, no one's gonna know. No one knows.
No one knows why I'm going crazy.
Me in the corner at the party. No one knows I saw the VHS tape.
That's insane. Yeah, that layer, like, the art was it's nostalgic, I guess, if you were into that exact like little show, and if you're into that, then cool. But all of the cards were bad, and then like the bonus card came through and it was like the worst card possible too.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember that someone, I don't know if like it got like posted or if it was like fan made, but somebody had posted, you know, they were like, oh, the secret card is a Nazgul. And everyone was like, okay, that makes it a little better, because at the time Nazgul were like worth 10 and up. Because like they were just really big, and especially if you ordered the foil. And so when people started getting their lairs and it wasn't a Nazgul, I don't even know what it was, but I know it wasn't a Nazgul. Oh, it wasn't it like Grim? No, I don't even think it was a land. Wasn't it like the evil guy who makes me think of salamanders? Do you know who I'm talking about? Was it that?
I'm looking it up right now.
Please do, because I don't remember, but I remember it was a major letdown.
Is it More Adventures in Middle Earth? Is that what it's called?
Maybe. I want to say yes, because I don't think there were that many Lord of the Rings lairs. Yes, yes.
Let's see. I found an opening on YouTube. This is great TV.
I will say, like, while you're searching, every time the professor posts a you know, secret lair like review video, I'm always the one holding the lairs that he's talking about, being like, ooh, I hope it was worth it. You know, I already spent the money, so I really hope he says these were worth it. And those were one of those lairs where I was like, I even knew it wasn't worth it before I even picked it up.
Yeah, it's worm tongue. That's what it is.
It was the salamander. In my head, I equate him to a salamander.
A salamander, yeah, with worm tongue.
He looks slippery and skeezy.
That makes sense.
Wasn't that even a misprint? Like, isn't there a misprint on that card? I remember people talking about
that,
too.
I don't know. Chase, I said, this is a bad secret lair. I'm ignoring it. Well, Chase, I'm glad that we finally got someone on the podcast that is a secret lair defender. Because on most episodes of the podcast, we go, hey, y'all, here's the new secret lair. And then Emma and Dan go, bleh.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know. I think it's nice. And Dan and Emma go, bleh.
Yeah.
So finally, there's two of us in the podcast's history. Actually, Lexi likes secret lairs, too. So
yeah.
Three versus two of people who have talked about secret lairs on the podcast. Secret lairs stay winning.
They do. They really do.
I was thinking in my mind that we hadn't gone very long, but we have actually already been talking for like 30 minutes. So, and that's what I usually try to keep these to in length. So do you have anything that you would like to leave my audience with, Chase?
Damn, that's such an open question. Okay.
It can be about secret lairs. It can be about anything else. Most people start talking about their life story.
Remember to eat your vegetables. Always get, you know, proteins good every day. Wear sunscreen, even on days that it's raining. And most importantly, remember to have fun.
We're having fun playing Magic the Gathering?
Nah, we're complaining loudly on the internet.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Chase, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
I hope that we no longer have to lie about our days.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. If you liked what you heard, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you really enjoyed listening, you can support us directly on Patreon. I'll even send you a sticker in the mail. Every little bit helps us make the best podcast we can for you. Check out the link in the podcast description. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info also lives in the podcast description. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Herald's Horn and any place else you can find us too. If you want to reach out to me about the podcast, hit up editorial@heraldshorn.com. I'd love to see your email. Thanks again for listening to The Herald's Horn. We're having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks.